like genuine from the heart, if you can really be understanding of those baby steps, because none of us started off, you know, 100% there, right? We all took our baby steps. We all took one step at a time. We learned a little bit, we changed a little bit. We learned a little bit, we changed a little bit. And so we need to be understanding of the people around us that are going through that same process and reinforce that process. Hey there, welcome to another episode of the Willing Equine Podcast. I'll be recording this episode in my car, so the audio may not be super clear, and sometimes I have my kids with me, so if you hear a little bit from them, I apologize, but hopefully you can still enjoy the podcast. I'd love to hear from you after you listen to the podcast, so feel free to comment on any of my social media platforms or email me or even send me an Anchor voice message. Hello, hello. So I'm back with another episode. This time I wanted to talk about a question that's been coming up pretty frequently with my students and new people that are enrolled in my foundation course and people who are making a transition over to working with more positive reinforcement. Or even if not working with positive reinforcement, they are just making changes in their horse's life that may or may not be mainstream. And they're kind of, you know, wondering how to talk to their friends, how to talk to their family, how to talk to their trainers, how to talk to the people around them in general about why and how they're doing things differently, or if they even should talk about it, and how to help them understand too, because I think one thing I don't think any of us are really prepared for is how much conflict it can bring up in relationships and how it can divide relationships, the way we work with our horses. And it's unfortunate. It's really unfortunate, to be honest, that we become so divided because of how we keep our horses and how we train our horses. I mean, it's unfortunate that if you have a friend that is continuing to take traditional riding lessons and, or maybe works with natural horsemanship or something like that, and you start switching over to working with more positive reinforcement and working with food rewards and all of that, how that, just because you guys are working so differently with your horses, can really divide your relationship and even be the source of the end of that relationship. And I find that really unfortunate for a variety of reasons. One, it's just emotionally very stressful and painful. And two, we need our friends. We are a social species. We need people around us. We need a support system. We need a tribe. We need our, you know, the people we can go to and talk about our horse stuff. We need to be able to share that love and passion for our horses with the people around us. And it's even more of a struggle when it's a family member, somebody that you're very much connected to by blood, or, you know, just a family tie that, it's not as so simple as, well, she, you know, we used to take riding lessons together and now we just kind of slowly, gradually faded apart as far as our relationship goes. This is different because you have to be around these people on a daily basis, or maybe they're even helping support your horses and your interaction with horses. Maybe it's your parents and they are helping pay for your riding lessons or keeping a horse. I know that's the case for a lot of young people, and that was the case for me as well. And it can become really challenging when your parents don't understand working with food rewards. What do you mean? I've just paid for years of riding lessons and I bought you a horse that you could ride, and now you don't want to ride anymore? Like, why do we even have a horse? This doesn't make any sense. I've seen that scenario over and over and over again. It's really challenging. It's really challenging to work through. It's really challenging to help them understand. And it's really challenging to even be in that situation, even if it goes well. Like, if everything goes well, your parents, your friends, whoever, make that transition with you, or maybe just respectfully work to understand it, but don't make the change themselves, that's fine. Just that process is emotionally very draining, not being sure whether or not they agree, you know, you wanting them to be on the same page as you, be your support system, but they don't really understand and you're having to explain it to them and you don't really know how. And it just becomes this very stress-inducing, anxiety-inducing experience, even if it goes really, really well. And then, of course, the situations where it doesn't go well are even worse emotionally. So, and especially coming from somebody like myself who, believe it or not, I am very non-confrontational. I cannot stand confrontation. It really eats away at me. It keeps me up at night if I know I'm going to have a confrontation with somebody or I know I'm going to have to bring up something that may cause some confrontation. That is so emotionally draining on me. I just want things to go smoothly. I want to make everybody happy. I want them to like me. I want them to agree with me. I want the horse to be taken care of. I don't want the horse to be put in the middle of any sketchy situations or for them to suffer because the two humans are arguing. It's just a mess to me, and it's so stressful. So for anybody who's listening to this right now who, you know, or that feel that same way, I completely understand, and I do not want to minimize how hard it's going to be to make this, make switches and to have these conversations with people and to stand up for your horse and to educate the people around you. So I'm just kind of putting that out there where going through this episode, I want to talk to you about that and talk to you about my experiences and some of my recommendations and some of the ways I've helped people around me understand. But I just want you to know I'm not going to be able to completely eliminate that stress for you, that it is going to be a little bit stressful, and I'm really sorry. I wish it could be any other way, but I'm hoping that I can give you some ideas, some help that will make it less so, that maybe you can avoid the already difficult situation that turns out well. I'm hoping you can avoid that turning into a difficult situation that turns out poorly. So that's kind of my goal, is I want to give you some suggestions, because there's no exact recipe, but I've been doing this for long enough where I feel like I can offer some tips. Every situation is unique. There's a lot of different variables. There's a history between you and these other people. There's tons of different aspects that are involved that I can't necessarily know when I'm talking on this episode. But if anybody ever needs any one-on-one, very specific, maybe it's a delicate situation, help, I'm happy to provide that assistance. I offer consultations and through my website if you're interested, an email and video, and for, you know, certain circumstances, I have phone consultations available as well. But hopefully this episode will give you enough to go and work off of, and you can adapt it how you need for your situation. So I get it. It's going to be difficult. It is difficult, but I feel like the more you practice it and the more you practice the tools that I hope to give you, and the more you practice being your horse's advocate, which actually in episode, I think it's like 3 or 4, maybe it's the second one, I can't remember, in this podcast, it's called Your Horse's Defender, I think. And that whole episode is about why you should stand up for your horse, why you need to be the one that takes care of them, because they are voiceless. They cannot stand up for themselves. So as their primary caregiver, as their primary caregiver, or even not their primary one, but as a caregiver for them, it is important that we speak up for them and that we protect them in situations that are sketchy. So we're going to have to get past our desire to not have conflict in order to protect our horses. And at the end of the day, you're going to feel so much better about yourself than that avoided conflict. I would much rather have a conflict. I guess just put it this way. if I have a situation where I know it's not going to go well for the horse, so if it proceeds on. So if I, let's say I'm dealing with another professional, so I have a body worker come in to work with one of my horses, and it's starting to look a little sketchy, like maybe the body worker is being impatient with the horse, is, you know, starting to show signs that they might start reprimanding or punishing the horse, or maybe they're talking about things that are making me feel a little uncomfortable. As far as how are they going to interact with my horse, it's giving me hints as to how they interact with horses in general. I would much rather have that conflict, it'd be super mild if you approach it, you know, in a nice way, hopefully, or respectful way, I guess I should say. I would much rather step in and tell that professional, hey, look, nope, it's nothing personal. I just, for this horse right now, this is not the right situation and he's not ready for this. And so we're going to stop this appointment or something like that. Like that, that was, it's not, again, I told him it's not personal, whether or not it, you know, maybe you don't necessarily agree with what it is they're saying. It is still not personal. Like you're not saying that they're a terrible person because they don't agree with you. It is truly not a personal thing. It's just, you don't necessarily agree with that. You don't want them interacting with your horse. There's nothing wrong with you stepping in and saying, not right now. This is not the right situation. I don't feel comfortable. You're going to feel so much better about that, even if it takes a lot of guts to make that happen. Even if you have this like anxiety pit inside your chest as it's building up and you're like, I've got to say something. And you don't want to, and you have to like take that leap. You have to all of a sudden go, okay, I'm going to do it. And you force yourself to do it. And that whole situation is really uncomfortable. Trust me, I've been there many times. It's really uncomfortable to do that. That you will feel much better about yourself with that later than you will if you allow the situation to keep going and you don't say anything and the horse gets, you know, reprimanded in a way you're not happy with, and then they have this fear learning situation and now they're scared of body workers and you feel guilty and torn up about it and you wish you had stepped in, you wish you had said something sooner. I mean, that one, that will eat you up for a long time later, versus if you just take that leap and you just jump in and you push past that brief anxiety and you say something, and again, it's respectful, it's not personal, it's, you're not attacking them, you're just saying, not right now, not for this thing, you will feel so much better about doing that in that moment than in letting things just go, because you don't want to have confrontation, you don't want to be confrontational, and then regretting it later. So that's kind of, I've already kind of jumped into some of my recommendations, where that's one of them that I use pretty frequently. I start to look for any signs. I start to look for something that indicates to me that maybe this person isn't going to be on the same page as me. That doesn't mean they're right. That doesn't mean, you know, or wrong. And that doesn't mean I'm right or wrong. It just means we're not on the same page. And that's what's important, that you're not on the same page. And it doesn't matter what you're training with or how you're training or what your methodology is or what your belief systems are. It is critical. All trainers will tell you this. Successful training is critical, or the critical aspect to successful training is consistency. So anytime there is back and forth, it's shades of gray, there's no consistency, the horse is experiencing this sometimes, the horse is experiencing that sometimes, that's going to end up in poor training and poor results. So it does not matter what the training is. This is not an R plus versus natural horsemanship argument. This is purely an effective training protocol argument. So any professional should respect, or any, I would hope that most decent equine professionals will understand if you step in and say, nothing personal, I totally get what you're saying right now, or what your goal is here, but this is not our protocol right now. This is not what we've been training right now, or I'm not comfortable with this right now, or I need to think about this more, or the horse needs more time and more preparation to proceed forward with this treatment or this interaction or this training protocol or whatever it is. So, it doesn't really matter what reasoning you use, as long as you're very concise, you're very to the point about it and you don't make it personal. This is not a, my training is more ethical than your training. That's not what this is about. This is about taking care of your horse. This is about setting them up for success. This is about effective training. So that's one of the, when I'm dealing with professionals and I need to stop a situation and be their defender, their advocate, whatever, that's my primary go-to. And this allows the relationship to remain intact. And I pay them for their time. I let them know that I will work with the horse. I actively work with the horse. I'm going to make sure that everybody's taken care of. I don't expect them to walk away without being paid. And I also will often tell them that, my interest is in their safety, so I want them to be safe. And for that to happen, I need to work with this horse more. And I, most professionals will very much greatly appreciate you being considerate of their safety and you calling it a day or saying not right now or not in this situation or not do that because of their own safety. Because at the end of the day, they got to go work on another horse. So going to the hospital is not in their best interest, regardless of their training, you know, whether or not they want to pursue the training aspect of it. My thought is that probably in these situations, you're mostly dealing with people like farriers and vets, or massage therapists or, you know, other types of professions, but you may be dealing with a trainer. And if that's the case, then you could just tell them something like, I love what you're trying to do. Or you don't even have to say that. You could say, I'm going to think on this. I want to think about it some more. I want to really take time to process what you've told me. I don't want to pursue it forward today, but I will let you know as soon as we're ready to move forward. And so that's just kind of a nice, polite way to cut it off, to say, that's great. I totally get it. I respect your opinion. I respect your decision. Right now, I don't want to move forward with this. And that's your prerogative. That's what you're the paying client. It's your horse. That's okay to do that. And if you've got the trainer that's actively on the horse or something like that, I would recommend going back and listening to that other podcast episode. But because I don't want to spend too much time here. This is mostly dealing with professionals. It's okay to step in and say, please get off my horse right now. Or please do not do that with my horse right now. And then when you stop the situation right then and right there, you can then, you know, once you get control of the situation again, be like, look, that was nothing personal. I totally get what you were trying to do. That's just not within our training program right now. And I'd like to go back and work on this on my own. And then we'll give you a call again when we're ready or something like that. Just step in, cut it off, black and white. It's not personal. Be respectful, be understanding, and move on. So that's when dealing with, and again, paying for their time. You need to be respectful of the fact that they just put time and energy and put themselves possibly at risk to do the job that you called them out there to do. So you do need to pay them for it. That's just part of it. You're just going to have to do that. So what about situations though, when you're dealing with, we'll tangent off of the trainer situation. So let's say you've been working with this trainer and you do like this trainer a lot and you like a lot of what they're doing, but there's some things that you're starting to change your mind on. Maybe it's the way that you're feeding your horse. Maybe you want to switch over to 24/7 hay, whereas before they were just feeding a couple flakes of hay. And so you want to start changing that. How do you talk to your trainer in a respectful way and have that, you know, what seems like could be this big confrontational moment, while remaining respectful of them and not severing the relationship, because you do like them and you don't want to make them upset and you do want to be respectful. This is tough because you have to, you're playing a fine line. You're playing a line between being the client, the paying client, and being able to say, this is what I would like you to do as the professional that I've hired and am paying to do this. There is a point where you can say, I want you to do this. And they need to respond to that. And they either need to let you know that, no, I can't do this. If you'd like me to help you find another trainer or another boarding facility that will do it, I can do that. But I'm just not going to do that right now. Or they need to adapt and to keep your business. So there is that aspect where you are the paying client, and try not to let them intimidate you because they've been doing this longer. That doesn't disqualify the information that you have. Somebody can have been doing something for 30 or 40 years and have been doing it wrong. There's so many situations out there that are good examples of this where, you know, for years and years and years, we thought, I can't even think of anything off the top of my head right now, but I know there's so many things out there. I mean, whether it's medication, you know, type of medication we were using for certain things, whether it was our diet, you know, they used to use radium in like jewelry and things like that. And they did it for a long time. And then they started realizing it was killing people. So just because somebody's been doing something for years and years and years doesn't mean it's right. So the number of years that somebody has been doing something doesn't necessarily equal qualification or equal correctness, I should say. So there can be people who have just started working with horses, you know, maybe 5 years ago, let's say, but have just been grinding over the recent research and the recent training research and learning from the best and the most modern and current trainers and looking at the studies and going to all the expos and all of that, and has been just grinding away at that and clocking the hours, and have more updated and better information about caring for your horse than somebody who's been boarding horses for 40 years and been doing it the same way they've done it since 40 years ago. So try not to let your years, your literal years that you've been working with horses, disqualify in your own mind your opinion and how you want your horse taken care of, and your ability to ask the professionals that work with you on a team. It's supposed to be a team with your horse. Try not to let that get into your head and just be like, because this lady's been doing this for 40 years, that makes me, I don't even have a voice. I can't even say anything. That's not true. That is absolutely not true. If it's your horse and you are a paying client and you are their primary caregiver and you feel very passionate about this newer information or this new way of doing things, go for it, do it. But we need to be considerate and respectful again. And we can do this by saying, you know, coming to them and saying, hey, you know what? I was just learning about feeding horses. And I went to this great course and I was learning all about this. And I was wondering if you'd be interested in learning about it too, because I'm really wanting to consider switching this horse over to 24/7 hay. And I'd like to hear your opinions on it, your thoughts on it. And maybe you want to take this course with me. Or, and that's one way you can approach it from more of like a friendly, like, hey, let's learn this together. And I find a lot of people will accept that more openly, or willingly, I should say. And that's very also something you could use with family members and friends. So bring them along for the ride, bring them along for the educational, aspect, the learning process, versus telling them that they've got it wrong and you've got it right. So opening them up to the possibilities and feeding them information gradually is a great way to help people change their minds without it seeming like you're shoving stuff down their throat, and without seeming like you have a superiority complex, like you have a moral high ground because you feed your horse 24/7 and they don't. So definitely consider using that as a tactic towards having change for your horse's care and for your family, for the professionals in your life, all of that. The other thing you can do is present it from a, you know, monetary time aspect. Hey, I was doing some research about this. I'd really like to switch my horse over to 24/7 hay. If I bought my horse the hay net and it reduced how much you were how often you're having to feed him and how much you're having to feed him, what could we do this? You know, I could even fill up the hay net when I'm there once a day. I'll fill it up and it'll last him all night. And then that reduces how much work your staff are having to do. Would that be an option? So giving them a solution that benefits them too, like presenting the benefits, the pros and cons basically, but mostly the pros, will help them more readily say yes to something. So that's an option for you as well when it comes to helping people around you change their own behaviors and their own methods and their own approaches to better suit or to be more, more what you're looking for. When we're dealing with friends though, and they're not necessarily our horse's caregiver, they don't necessarily have direct interaction with our horses, but we find that our conversations end up having some conflict because of, not conflict, but it's starting to look like the conversation, there are more times that we disagree than agree. This can be a tricky situation, and I think has to be handled with a certain amount of looking at the pros and cons of the relationship and looking at all of the different variables, like what's this person's learning history? What are their experiences? What about their old riding and training habits or horse keeping habits are reinforcing to them? And then, you know, what are you doing that's different than theirs? And are they necessarily doing something that's wrong in your mind or unethical in your mind? Or is it just different than what you're doing? And sure, it's not ideal in your mind, but they're not harming the horse. As far as I know, we could get into the little pieces of that. And I understand, trust me, I completely understand. Yes, not providing the horse with hay 24/7 could be considered harmful. And it is, in my opinion, harmful to the horse. But, you know, when we're looking on a scale of absolutely worst case scenario to best case scenario, maybe that horse gets quite a bit of hay every day, but there's a couple hours at night and a couple hours during the day that they don't have hay. To me, I'm like, okay, it's maybe not ideal, but that's pretty dang good. I'm going to reinforce that for this friend. I'm going to say, I just love how you offer your horse so much hay, and hey, let me know if you ever want me to toss him some extra hay during the day so he doesn't ever run out, and that will maybe help him with some of the ulcer issues I know you guys have experienced in the past or whatever. So you're offering them an easy solution, you're helping them out, and you're also kind of gently suggesting some behavior change for them in a way that it could benefit without having that superiority complex and doing it like, well, you know, I was reading this article and it says you should feed your horse 24/7 and you know, that's probably causing your horse's ulcers. And I would look into that because that just doesn't seem right. Like, that just comes off as super, you know, negative and like from a superiority, like a superior state of mind. And like, well, I'm just doing things better than you are. And you're probably causing your horse's issues and bad owner. So it's all in the way we present the information. It's all in the way we talk to people. Is it coming from a place in our heart where we genuinely are trying to help them out? Or is it coming from a place in our heart where we want to show how much we know and we want to show them how little they know and how they are doing bad by their horse and that we know better and we found the way and we are being more ethical and more considerate and all of this, we could go on and on and on. So really assessing the place in your heart that it's coming from. And is it in the horse's best interest? You know, or are we bringing up this information to really help out the horse? Because I know we can say, yes, it's for the horse, that we want them to feed 24/7 because we want the horse to be better and healthier and all of that. But when you're looking at the amount of variables that are involved in situations like this, if the person says, well, I can't feed him hay 24/7 because it's too expensive and then I just wouldn't be able to keep a horse and I'd have to sell him, is it better for that horse to have a pretty good home where maybe they don't have hay all day, but they're well cared for, their tack fits, all of that, or to be sold and, you know, end up in who knows where land and have, you know, who knows what kind of owner and what kind of diet and all of that. So I realize that's a really, you know, an extreme situation, but we have to take these things into consideration when we are using positive punishment, towards people. And what I mean by that is like punishing them for their actions, telling them they are bad people because they don't do this or that, or telling them that they are not doing the best training by their horse because they're not using positive reinforcement. That can be so negative towards people, make them feel really bad about themselves and make them even question themselves and question the relationship, and then can give them a really bad taste in their mouth about people who do promote feeding hay 24/7 or do promote training with positive reinforcement. We don't want that either. We want them to want to change their behavior if that's what we're after. And if that's the case, then we need to be reinforcing for the behaviors that we want. And what I mean by that is when you see behavior that is in the direction of making positive changes for the horse, reinforce it, be happy about it. Try not to nitpick the fact that it's not 100%. But when your friend stops chasing their horse around the pasture to catch the horse, but instead uses a food bucket every time they go to catch their horse, that's a big change. I mean, it's sure they're catching the horse to then go do something the horse doesn't like, but it's still a positive change. It's still better than it was before. So we need to reinforce that. We need to say, that's awesome. It's such a great job, but without being patronizing or making them feel belittled. But like genuine from the heart, if you can really be understanding of those baby steps, because none of us started off, 100% there, right? We all took our baby steps. We all took one step at a time. We learned a little bit, we changed a little bit. We learned a little bit, we changed a little bit. And so we need to be understanding of the people around us that are going through that same process and reinforce that process. When it comes to family and people that don't understand why you're not riding your horse, and, why did we buy you this horse, if you're never going to ride it? Or even friends or family that are like, why aren't you riding your horse? And dealing with that criticism and that negativity, even from people who aren't your friends necessarily, they're just outsiders judging you. I think for certain people, like friends and family, like close friends and family who are an active part of your life, it is important to have that sit-down conversation and explain to them that it's not that you have abandoned goals, and it's not that you are just becoming disinterested but it's not that you are just letting the horse sit out at pasture and because you've lost interest. And it's like, I don't know if you guys have seen this, but for me, I saw it growing up where I grew up with a big group of girls that were all into horses, and some of them, they'd get a boyfriend or whatever, go off to college and they lose their interest in horses, and the horses would sit out in pasture for a while or be sold. That's fine. It's totally fine if they want to do that. But I think in a lot of people's minds, when a horse gets put out to pasture and when they don't see them being ridden, that's the association that's being made. So sitting down and having that conversation with your family and your friends and saying, look, this is not about me losing interest. In fact, I'm even more interested than I ever was before. I'm specifically looking at and learning a very a unique way of working with horses, a unique process of interacting with the animals around me. And my horse is still in active training sessions. We are still actively working together. He's still learning. I'm still learning. We take lessons if that's the case. Or even you could say we're in courses where I'm reading books. Like, this is an active pursual of our I am actively pursuing my education, and there is no loss of value, and your money is not going to waste here, because I am doing what I love, and I'm doing it, and I love it even more now, and I'm getting even more value out of it now. And you could even go through a long list of the ways maybe learning with positive reinforcement is benefiting you in your life. You're learning how to communicate with people with a more positive interaction. You're learning how to, you're learning about behavior and how the environment around us impacts our behavior. And you're learning about work ethic and pursuing goals and shaping plans. So having a step-by-step goal, which will help you in finding a future career and being successful in that career, and having that stepping stone, that shaping plan towards your goals in a career is so valuable. And you can learn that in your interactions with horses. So coming up with a pro list, a list that it shows how much you are learning on a day-to-day basis, doing it the way you're doing it now, I think can really help parents and anybody else that might be supporting your horses, or even your friends who don't understand. And with this needs to be a sense of understanding that they may not get it, and that's okay. They may not get it. They may not switch over to working with horses the same way as you. They may want to still talk about their way of training, and they're, excited about their their goals being achieved. Maybe for you, you've stopped riding and you're working on Liberty stuff from the ground, and you're really excited about the fact that you did Liberty trot circles yesterday for the first time, which is super awesome. Congratulations. I'm just letting you know for myself and for real. but they are going to come to you with their same success stories. Hey, I ran that barrel pattern for the first time, or I got my horse to, you know, my horse who refuses to be caught, I caught him yesterday in just 5 minutes versus the 3 hours that it would take before. Like, for you, you're probably thinking, oh my gosh, I can't believe, like, what did you have to do to get the horse to be caught, kind of thing. But it doesn't, we shouldn't diminish their successes to make ourselves like feel better about our own successes. And if we want them to be understanding of our passion and our goals and our successes and all of that, then we need to be just as understanding of theirs and how they feel about theirs. We may not have the same goals, we may not agree on things, but we still need to be understanding of it. And then when you see, you know, or I guess I should say, one of the most powerful things that can start to happen is that your friends and your family can start watching this change. They can start watching the process. They can start seeing how your horse runs to greet you at the gate every day, or how your horse is really patient with the farrier. And even though he used to kick violently, now he stands quietly and doesn't kick anymore. Maybe they start to see that you have a relationship with your horse where you can just go sit and hang with them. Or maybe now you're riding without tack and where they are still, I don't know, and maybe used to have to ride in a really big bit and whips and spurs and all that. That change, they're going to start to say, I want that too. And then that's when you can be there and say, that's awesome. I so would love to help you. But again, it's going to be baby steps. Just where you started, it's baby steps again. So, in reinforcing those baby steps, I can't express this enough, like reinforce those baby steps, those steps of progress forward. And you know, there's going to be people that go, man, you're just so lucky. Your horse is so good. And I wish my horse would do that. I know that that can come off as really offensive because it implies that you didn't put a ton of work and a ton of time into this with your horse. And we all know you did. What you can say is, yeah, he's a pretty awesome horse. So, you know, we clocked a lot of hours. I started learning about a new way of training, things like that. So try not to like brush them off or be offended or, you know, have a rude reply back. Instead, accept the compliment that your horse is amazing, and which we know and we knew. And you're an amazing trainer, by the way, that you made it look so flawless and so easy that it just seemed like luckiness that you were lucky. And then drop that hint in there. Yeah, it just took so much. It took a lot of time and we started training a different way. And then they're going to start to wonder, what's that different way? And they're going to start asking. So kind of wrap this whole thing up. I want to really get back in. I want to kind of express to, you know, it's important to remember that change is hard for people. That change is rarely, if ever, accepted without fighting back. We see it in politics. We see it in dietary things, we see it in medical, changes within the medical industry. We see it, in parenting, you know, learning how to parent better. Just the process of being a parent, and that's changed a lot over the years. We see it in how we feed our horses, how we take care of their feet, how we, you know, fit their tack, how we, how we're training, things like that. We see this everywhere. This is not unique to people judging positive reinforcement. Actually, a really good example of this is saddle fit and all that. It used to be, at least when I was growing up, in where the rider had their saddle, and this still is, I see this still in some circles, but the rider has their saddle and then they threw it on whatever horse they were going to ride that day. Didn't matter if it was a quarter horse, if it was a 17-2 warm blood, if it was a scrawny little thoroughbred or a big, thick, round Mustang, or it didn't matter. It didn't matter who the horse was and how their back was built. You had your very nice couple thousand dollar or more saddle, and you threw it on whatever horse you got on that day. And oh my gosh, those horses must have been in so much pain. But having a saddle custom fit to the horse, and the horse having its saddle, or a horse and rider team having their saddle, and then if you got a different horse, you had a different saddle for that horse that fit you too, but it was for the horse as well. that's new. And it has been fought tooth and nail, and people just were like, oh, it's fine, you know, just throw the saddle on any horse. Like they said in just that voice too. Not really. Most of the time they were just like, no, it's fine. Just put it on any horse and it's good. You know, just put on different saddle pads. You know, you put on a riser pad, you put on a gel pad, you put on whatever, you know, half pad thing to adjust the saddle fit. Yeah. And so we've come such a long way, but that didn't happen overnight. I mean, it's been 20 years since, well, okay, so yeah, like I'm thinking it's been, yeah, at least 20 years since, you know, I have, since that process, since I began that process of learning about saddle fits and learning, you know, at the beginning of those 20 years ago, I would just throw the saddle on any horse. And then now where I am now, I fit the saddle per horse. And then I also make sure it fits me. So that has taken a lot of time, and it's still catching up in certain areas, like in the Western saddle fitting world. That's, it's really uncommon to have a saddle fit to the horse. It's a lot of just wide Western saddles that you throw on any horse. And when it says custom Western, it means that you picked the fabric and the design and the tooling and the, you know, the color of the leather and all that. It doesn't mean that the saddle was actually fit to the horse's back. That's changing, but it has been slow. So, and a lot of people fought back. They fought back. They didn't think it was needed. And, you know, they started saying things like, oh, what, you know, your horse is such a baby. It needs a custom saddle. Like, you know, I don't have money for that. All of that. Like, they would fight it. They'd fight it so hard because it's just not what we did. And the horses were fine. And my, you know, my horses back in the day, we just rode in the same saddle for every horse. And we rode hours and hours and hours every day. They did just fine. So that's the stories they would get from the saddle fitting, or we would get and still get sometimes. We should expect to hear those same stories about changing horse training methods and the way we feed our horses and things like that. We need to expect that that's coming. And being educated and confident in your education is so important. And we need to not judge those people or be disrespectful towards them and their opinions and their experiences or diminish their understanding. We need to be considerate and compassionate towards them. And respectful, while remaining confident in our decisions we've made for our horses, and trying not to burn a bunch of bridges. You don't need to be harsh. You don't need to be like, well, this is the way I'm doing it, and you know, peace out. Like, I'm not talking about being that way. I'm talking about just like, I absolutely hear what you have to say. I will take all of that into consideration, especially if somebody gives you unsolicited training advice, saying something like, thank you so much for, you know, or not thank you so much, because you don't want to really encourage them to continue to give people unsolicited advice, but you can say something like, okay, I hear what you have to say. I will take it into consideration. I'm going to go and think about that, and I'll let you know, or I'll talk, see if I can find a trainer to help me if I decide to go that route. For right now, I'm working on this training approach right here, and I want to stay consistent with it. And if it doesn't work out, I'll let you know, and we'll talk about it some more. So it's a way you can just be like clear and concise as far as like, okay, I'm not going to do that right now, but I did hear you, and I will come to you if I need help, and I will listen, and you know, if this doesn't work out, I'll reach out to you. So you're making them feel heard, but you're also letting him know that you don't really need the unsolicited training advice. And maybe if it's a friend, like somebody that's more personal and close, you could thank them. You could be like, awesome, thanks for the tip. I'll let you know if I want to, I'm going to go think about it. I'm going to think about it. And, you know, right now we're working on this, this certain training approach we're working on. I want to be as consistent as possible to make sure I maximize the effectiveness. But if it doesn't work, I will reach out to you and I would love to hear more about that training approach. And that's just a way of like being super nice, and polite and respectful while still being like, I'm confident in what I'm doing. Like, I don't need to change it. I don't need to do what you're saying, and that's okay. Like, it's completely okay. They should and will do the same thing back to you. If you were to come up to them, and this is another part of it, I could just go on and on and on about this all day, is try not to give people unsolicited advice. If you don't like unsolicited advice, don't give it back to them. So, I don't think anybody likes railbirds and people who give advice without being asked. So try not to be one of those people. It comes off as very judgmental and as like you're looking down on them, like they need help. If somebody will walk up to me and say, you know what you should do with that horse is you should give him a good pop on the halter. That would come off to me like they were kind of like telling me I didn't know what I was doing, and they did. They did know what they were doing, and that's what I should do. So it just doesn't, it's never taken well. And it's a tactic that a lot of adults will use on younger people, because we, as older people, as adults and stuff, we can be, we can kind of throw our weight around to intimidate a younger generation, which is sad, but it's just kind of how it's been done. A lot of older trainers tend to, I've seen it firsthand and I experienced it, where they bully their students into being blindly obedient about everything, and that's not right. So we don't want to be that way towards younger people or any person or new equestrians. We could put ourselves in that same boat, that same dynamic, where we're the more experienced horse person, even if we are younger. We're more experienced because we've been doing it longer, and here's this new unexperienced horse person, and we can come up and be like, you know what you should do? You should do this, or you should do that. A lot of times they will nervously accept it as advice. They will accept it and even say thank you for whatever. But if you pay attention to their behavior and stuff, oftentimes I find they're really uncomfortable about it, probably because they were feeling insecure about themselves. And then now you've just kind of, you know, mentioned that they need help and they don't know what they're doing. And so now they're like, yeah, I know. I'm still figuring this out. I don't know what I'm doing. And so they are very likely to kind of blindly accept your advice. And I feel like that can be taken poorly, and it's not necessary. Instead, I would rather people be like, hey, would you like some help? Or maybe in a different time when it's not in the middle of the training, you know, whatever, you could, you know, bring up a personal story, be like, yeah, I remember when I was first getting into horses, I would get stuck, you know, on these things. And you know what really helped me was, you know, doing research or talking to my trainers or finding a community of like-minded people, or making sure that I was always at the barn with somebody who could help me, or I don't know, just trying to make it more personal and less about you telling them they've got it wrong and they need to fix it. So it's, again, it's all about the phrasing, it's all about the words, it's all about the way the information is presented in the timing of the information. So we need to try not to tell, you know, force information down people's throats. We need to not tell them that they're, you know, not doing it right and coming from a moral, like, or a training superiority platform, like we know what we're doing and they don't. I find that I've gone through it this whole episode, all the different downsides to it, and I just don't think it's helpful. I think if you want to help people make that transition, and if you want to help teach people about positive reinforcement in your community, in your group, your barn, maybe set up a little weekend clinic or a little roundtable discussion, or just invite some people who might be interested, who've been watching you train and are curious, and maybe they're like, hey, will you teach me? Maybe you can get a couple of them together, like on a Saturday morning, and have a little, like, here, you know, maybe you're not a professional, but you can still teach them something. You can still share what you're doing, but just tell them, like, I'm not a professional, but I, you know, maybe we could do a little group thing and I'll share with you what I've been learning. And that's a great way to plant a seed and come off as a non-threatening form of information to them, and allow them in a place, a safe place, to explore and learn and try something new. You could even try and get your family involved, as far as like, hey, you know, mom or dad or brother or sister or whatever, do you want to come out to the barn and I'll kind of show you what I've been doing and some of the progress we've made, and get them involved and really show them like the positives and being enthusiastic about it. And honestly, your enthusiasm, if you can share that enthusiasm, you can share what it's done for you, and you can share with them from a place of being humble and respectful, it's infectious. People will want that. People will want to learn. They'll want to figure out what it is you've been doing and how it's so awesome and all that. So try and be, the light for training and keeping horses in a different way versus the negative, you know, negative Nancy. I hate using people's names because anyway, the negative person at the barn that's like, you're not doing this right or you're not doing this right. And also, you know, just keeping in mind being respectful of other people and the fact that they may not agree with you, and that's okay. It's okay. Unless there is outright abuse happening where, you know, a horse is being beaten or starved or, you know, it's just terrible and the horse, it's clearly abuse, and then you should report it to the authorities. I think it's important to be a light rather than just condescending and disrespectful and all of that. And at the end of the day, for most people, unless it's like direct family or whatever, you have the option to find somewhere else. You have the option to work with somebody else. You have the option to do something else. You're not in, there are certain situations where you are kind of stuck. I get it. But for most people, you can leave the barn you're at and go somewhere else. I know it's scary. I know it's terrifying. I know, it's going to make you all sorts of uncomfortable. There's going to be confrontation. I know it means moving your horse out of its comfort zone and where it's been in a family and a herd and all of that. But if it's going to help you feel more confident with your training and feel more at peace and you'll have a community again and the new environment that you'll be taking your horse to will be healthier and there'll be less negative training experiences around overall, it will have a positive result for both of you guys after a temporary negative one. So in a lot of situations, you can make those changes. You can change farriers, you can change vets, you can change trainers, you can change barns, you can change, you can find new friends. I don't recommend just like wholesale cutting everybody off because then you're really not helping anybody around you. And we want to help the people and the horses around us. But you can start to develop new relationships with people that are a little bit more like-minded to give you more of a balance. That way you're not constantly surrounded by people who disagree with you. And so finding the people that are supportive or even helping educate you and helping, you know, support you in your journey. And then that will prepare, that will give you confidence and reinforcement that will carry you through those situations that are a little tougher around the people who don't agree with you, that are going to balk at the suggestions you have, or that are just going to be like, well, I don't, you know, I don't know. It'll help you if you have more of a balance or you're more heavily weighed over to the side where most of your friends and the people around you are reinforcing and are supportive and are, understanding and respectful of what you're doing, you will have a much easier time with the people that are not that way. And so that will help you, I think, in the long run. And yeah, anyway, I've just talked on and on and on. So I hope this was helpful. I feel like there's a lot more suggestions and a lot more things I could say here. Maybe I'll do a part two. I'd love to hear any feedback you may have as far as maybe you've been in a situation, you've not known what to do, and there's this, you know, something, maybe you did this and it worked out really well, or you did that and it didn't work out well, or just stories. If you want to share stories with me of how you've helped influence the people around you in a positive way. Actually, I think that's what I want to do. I'd love to hear those stories. And if you want to either DM me at The Willing Equine on Instagram or, Facebook, you can even, well, actually Facebook is harder. So if you want to email me at info, so it's, the email is info. So I can't spell it. INFO at thewillingequine.com. If you want to email me a story that you have that you'd like to share, and it could be anonymous. You just let me know in the email that you want it to be anonymous, or if you don't care if your name is shared, I'll just share your first name. And maybe like the first letter of your last name. If you want to share a story of a way you've positively influenced somebody around you in the horse community, or a way you were able to, in a positive and respectful way, work through a situation with a professional who didn't necessarily agree with you, or a family member or something like that, I would love to hear these stories, and I'd love to share them with on social media and also within the TWE community. So send it And yeah, let's nix the, I'm going to nix the DM thing because it'll be hard to track. So if you can send those stories to info@thewillingequine.com, or you can go to the contact form on my website, thewillingequine.com, and send me those stories. I would love to share them if you want to share them with everybody. And, yeah, so I would love to share those, and I can't tell you how many times I've said that. Thanks so much for listening. If you'd like to find out more, head to my website, thewillingequine.com. On there, I have a really extensive blog. I'm a very prolific writer. And I also have an FAQ page. And the FAQ has all kinds of things. It has questions and answers about training and about my training specifically, as well as just general about working with positive reinforcement. There's also sections on there about health and behavior. So all of that. I'm also on a lot of different social media platforms, Instagram, YouTube, Facebook, so check those out. And I'd love to hear from you, so don't hesitate to email or send me a message.